Blog Talk Radio.
It's time for the Exposed Vet Radio Show. The Exposed Vet Radio Show, we discuss issues affecting today's veteran. Now, here's your host, John M. Ray.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, and veterans, and guests, and everybody else to the Exposed Vet Veterans Radio Show. Today's the 14th day of March 2024. Been a pretty day outside today here in Kentucky, and I don't know where you're at, but it's looks like it might rain this afternoon. But today we got Mr. Ray Cobb. He's a riding side saddle. You know, Mr.
Hey,
hey Ray, how you doing?
I'm doing great. I mean, yeah, we had a beautiful day down here today. I was riding around about 2:30 and looked down at the dash on the car. Said it was 80 degrees outside, so I turned off the air conditioner and rolled down the windows.
Oh, well, that's what you call a thrifty ride. Okay, you save some money on that air conditioner and that gas. Well, let's do it. Well, today we got a treat for you. Fresh off the Nova Conference in the big city of Washington, D.C., Mr. Alex Graham. Alex is a accredited appeals agent or non-attorney practitioner I guess he works for the Veterans Court and everybody else that needs to hire him. How you doing, Alex?
Hey, I'm doing good, John. Thank you for inviting me. It's always a pleasure. I go to all the Nova conventions or conferences, both spring and fall. Not so much to learn because I kind of absorb all that, but we do a lot of networking, talking to each other and confabulating and trying to figure out better ways to skin the VA cat.
Well, there's more than one way.
Well, you have to be adept at this game. As fast as I come up with a repair order to fix something that they've done to me or that they start doing differently, you might get away with it for a year or two, and all of a sudden they'll go like, ah, damn, he figured that one out. So they come up with another repair order to frustrate us. And so as we learn that one, that at last, like I said, another 2 years, and they change it again. It's an ongoing affair from when I first started doing this in 89 until now. It's almost night and day, but the best thing we've got going for us is the VBMS. It's kind of like having a mirror behind the dealer in a poker game where you can see his cards. So it makes it a whole lot easier to play poker.
It does.
Yeah, you know, Alex, you talk about that. Yesterday I had my 120-day caregiver review, and I'm talking to the lady, and I, you know, kind of told her I felt sorry for her because they never paid any attention to her notes and all this. And she said, but Mr. Cobb, we didn't deny you. I said, you didn't? No, we just considered you for level one. We didn't consider you for level two.
Well,
I'm like, okay.
Welcome to the club.
Yeah.
I see so many times that they'll say, well, you know, we couldn't grant your SMCT because we couldn't tell whether it was the PTSD or the TBI. And we combined them together because they're all mixed up. We can't tell the difference because we're stupid. So therefore, because we couldn't figure out which one it was, we couldn't give you SMCT. Oh, it's wonderful logic. It's impeccable logic. I couldn't have come up with a better one myself. The only problem is we got Saunders versus Wilkie. It's not the name of the disability. It's the degree of the functional impairment. As long as they're both SC, and you can't figure it out because you're paralyzed from the neck up and it's inextricably intertwined, and it would be too speculative to venture a guess. There's something called the benefit of the doubt. And there's another one that says that when you're in doubt, give them the higher of the two ratings percentages, err to the in favor of the veteran. So that's axiomatic. If you don't know whether it's PTSD or it's TBI, and you need to have it to be TBI in order to get to SMCT for your aid and attendance, then you would give it to them because it's at least as likely as not that it was the TBI as it was the PTSD. And as far as the matter goes, they're both service connected. So what's going on here? Oh, we didn't look at it that way. I had two of them right in a row back there, January 7th and January 15th, two SMCTs up from SMCL. And I wasn't the same HLR reviewer down there in St. Pete, but it was the same argument. It's like, well, if you guys don't know which one it is, then you got to give them the benefit of the doubt. And the lady's going like, well, you know something, Mr. Graham, you're right. That makes sense. 28 minutes later, he has SMCT. Same thing with the other guy. No, I take it back. The other one went up to the board, and he's so messed up. He had a heart attack at 100%. Oh, God, I can't even tell you all the stuff he's got wrong with him. But VA was, SMCS, sorry. We know it's like going over a cliff at Niagara Falls. If we go over the cliff and give him the SMC aid and attendance, Alex is going to get him that T. So we better not even venture into the A&A. We'll just keep him at S. Well, you can't do that with me. I'm not, I might have been born at night, guys, but Lord knows I wasn't born last night. So I like to tell those ladies when I'm talking to them on the HLR on the informal conference, I says, ma'am, you don't see the USS Mayflower tied up to my front porch.
Yep.
But anyway.
That's like a big crane to get it up there, man.
Well. The conferences were really killer. That we were going to have Joshua Jacobs or whatever his name was, the Undersecretary for Benefits Affairs, but he was a no-show, so they sent a couple other Gomers. To me, they're all 6-1 half dozen of the other. They all mumble, speak, hold their hat over their face so you can't see their lips moving. And they show all their little slides, and they blow through the nasty-looking slides as fast as they can and then start stressing the ones where, did you know that we've adjudicated almost 16,000 PACT claims since this came into, and we're getting ready to pull the trigger on another 24,000. And most people won, and really it's a lot of fun, and everybody's making money. We're handing those bronchitis and sinusitis awards out for 0%, like Mardi Gras beads on Fat Tuesday night.
Yeah.
It's just a whole lot of nothing burgers is what it is.
Zeros for heroes.
Yes, sir. Roger that. And the worst part about it is with these claims, you can have a claim in for something to do with Vietnam, let's just say for shits and grins, Parkinson's, nasty sucker. A whole lot of extras that go with it, hypophonia and your face sags and, oh, God, it's on and on and on. There's usually about 28 ratings associated with it. The majority of them are tens or zeros. I guess the thing that irks me is that they take you down these side roads and give you the aid and attendance, but you've got four extremities that don't work. You can't button your shirts. You can't walk without kissing the concrete on a fairly regular basis. But they won't say, oh, well, yeah, you lost the use of your lower extremities. Well, you've got Canadian crutches in your walker, and you can always fall back on the wheelchair, so you really haven't lost the use of them lower extremities yet. It's a battle to get to. They know. I sneak up on them. I'm not going to give everybody all my little tips and tricks here because I'd like to keep some of these going for about another 5 years until I retire at this. But I've found ways to get around it, with like little punchy pits you can dig to make them fall into it. And by the time they fall in, they're sunk. They can't get back out again. They can't say, oh, well, we didn't mean that. We didn't say that. Did you say that? Well, disregard what we just said. So, oh, God, we gave him 100% for his major depressive disorder. Uh-oh, there's another aid in attendance. Oh, but that's combined with the Parkinson's. No, sir, Parkinson's is a neurological deficit, sir. A major depressive disorder is ever having to do with the brain box. That's separate and distinct. That's two different parts of the brain. Well, that's no fair. That's what makes this game so wonderful. But there were a lot of slides that are, and they're proprietary slides, and I can't show them to you. I wish I could, but they actually have value to National Organization of Veterans Advocates, and I'm not allowed to just divulge all that because it's a work product. But the VA, on the other hand, brought their own batch of 18 slides with them. I've got them up on my screen, and I'm looking at some of them, and some of the stupidity they're involved in. I had one guy here in 2023. I counted it up. They racked him out to 33 C&P exams to prove that he had loss, so that they could prove that he didn't have loss of use of any extremity. And then they took an old one where the neurologist denied him and said, this guy said he does. It's an amazing process. And as my secret to this, and I wish every one of you guys had it, I'll give them to you on private emails. I email the VA secretary when it gets that, piled that high and deep. I say, I don't know how you guys do this, but when that guy starts having cerebrovascular accidents, minor low-grade concussions from his head hitting the concrete because he cannot walk safely by himself, I think that meets the metric of loss of use. VA, they'll just keep sending you out for another one and another one and another one. And finally, some guy who's in their hip pocket says, oh, yeah, he can walk just fine. And they'll say, well, see, Dr. Joe Bear said he's good to go. So got to deny that loss of use. But come back and see us again after your next cerebrovascular accident. We'll reexamine you. Yeah, that's not how you do it. It used to be a time where you'd come out with an IMO and they had their negative IMO before you. It was simple, 3.102. You say, no. I say, yeah. My doctor says, yeah, that's the metric. You can't keep going and getting more doctors trying to find the one that'll say no so that you can point to that. And say you have two no doctors to your one yes, doctor. That's not how it works. But just discussing this one thing that I was looking at that's staring me in the face right now, there's a worksheet that shows legacy system disposition rates. So starting in fiscal year 2019, when it actually switched over to AMA, anybody who was still in legacy over the years is ending up, for the most part, 59% of their claims are being remanded, if you can believe it. They waited 3-4 years for justice, and 60% of them are sent back to the down to the agency of jurisdiction for some defect that it doesn't state here what the defect is. The rate of grants for your claims hasn't varied, and if anything, it's gone down slightly. It was almost 19% grants of all the 100% claims that came before them up until 21, then it sank to 17% in 22, and it's currently at 18% right now are granted. Now, statistically, that's lower than back in the 16, 17, 18s era, because I know we were looking at 21% back then, if you didn't count the the VSOs and stuff like that, or the pro se's. If you're just looking at attorneys and agents records, we're pushing real high there, 21 up to 24% over a physical year. There's always dismissed, reconsidered, or vacated and redone. That's at 17%. Or no, excuse me, 6%. But the actual denial rate from the get-go is, they're saying, is 17%. Well, you and I both know you can add all those percentages up, and you still can't get to the magic 100% worth of percentages. So I don't, this is another one of those things like VA math. You take it with a grain of salt. But 59, 69, 90, 70, 77, 87, and 7 is 94 and 6. It adds up to 100, but I've been a part of that because I kept a lot of my stuff in legacy when we switched over to A&A. I didn't jump into that, called RAMP program or something. I did not go into that because if something could go wrong, Murphy's First Law has always been pretty adamant about that. If something can go wrong, it will. And of course it did. I don't think I heard of anybody that went through the RAMP program and came out the other end with a big fat paycheck. In the same period of time since the AMA began, so to speak, some of the statistics are almost are really intriguing. 37% were remanded at the beginning of the AMA. That number is at 39%. It's virtually unchanged in the scheme of things. The number of claims allowed in the AMA has varied from 31% granted in 2019, and it's down to 27 right now, 4 years later. Same thing on denied, has gone from 31% denied down to 17% denied. I don't think that's a product of any magic at the BVA. I think the BVA sends these things back, from what I can see. They kite them back to the AOJ and say, hey, you chuckleheads, I can see what you guys are doing. You're just pawning all this stuff on the BVA without developing it. So most of them are duty to assist, and they come flying back. And that number is going down because of two things. It's not that the BVA is granting more or that they're remanding more. I just think that they're ending up in some other nether region like duty to assist. That is a remand of sorts, but it's also a do-over. It's just like getting off the merry-go-round, walking all the way around to the other side and getting back on again. Just the old hamster wheel. Nothing's changed. And if you add 33 C&P exams to something, like some guy that just keeps throwing the dice until he craps out and goes, yay, you're not getting better justice. If you think you're getting higher grant rates under the AMA, go look at what's being granted. Sinusitis and bronchitis and flat feet for 0%, along with some hemorrhoids and tinnitus. Very, very little of it results in any compensable rating. Majority of it's just feel-good stuff. Hey, you got zero for hearing. Now you get free hearing aids. Whoopee, $5,000 hearing aids. I wouldn't give those hearing aids to my grandma. They're dinosaurs. I don't know. It's just, nothing has changed, John, Ray. really, nothing in the scheme of things has changed since the War of 1812. It's you file and you get denied, and I'd say fully 50-60% of these guys just walk away and say, well, yeah, I could see that coming, and they never go back. Occasionally, some do, and they come to me, old Vietnam vets are dying of cancer, and they'll go, I thought I'd give it one more whirl, and next two they know there are one. Because they didn't come back for 50 years. And now that we're allowed to get in there and fight for them instead of just BSOs, it's not the financial interest. There's a lot of people that have a lot of empathy for veterans attorneys that aren't fixated on money. And I talk to a lot of them at these conventions. You talk to Robert Chisholm, he really, his father built that company with him later on. He went into it in 1989, 1992. But that guy just likes to win. He just likes the joy of winning. It's not so much, and I made a lot of money doing it. He does all of DAV's claims. Everybody's got their own shtick. I think Bergman and Moore does all of, I can't remember who's they do. I think I'm going to say VFW, Hill and Potten does all of the American Legion. There's a lot of big name groups and they like to take all the VSO stuff. But you take the good with the bad. Sometimes you end up at court or wherever, trying to defend stupidity or something that can't be won. That's the deficit I see with that. But you see veterans attorneys, many of them are judge advocate general military attorneys who come to this business. I don't think you gain anything from one of them because all they did, they were busy putting drunks in jail and guys who stole cars and drove across 14 states before they got caught, got a big chicken dinner discharge. They saw the dregs of the enlisted society and probably a few officers too. But I'd rather have somebody like myself represent me if it were all said and done. Somebody was in the military. That's what I loved about Bob Walsh. That guy was Army, and he wasn't just Army JAG. He was a combat infantryman badge Bob, ARCOM Bob. I mean, he's walked the walk with me. He knows what combat is all about. And that's almost the kind of guy you want going up to bat for you. And there's damn few of them. That's the only problem. And they're getting to be fewer and fewer. There are a lot of my age that are all retiring out of this. But if I were to look at it, I bet you statistically they have higher win rates than most guys. I have three right now up at the court, and one on its way back down from the court at the board right now. Ken Carpenter's writing, he said he wanted to write the brief on fighting after he got to vacate remand from the court. And I'm all for it. Hey, if he wants to write it, fly at it, Ken. Less work for me. But statistically, we're making inroads because I like the fact that NOVA teaches. They don't teach you to have the fire in your belly. Nobody can teach you that. But they teach all the law that you need to win, the arguments that you need. I think attorneys are kind of a little bit Casper milquetoasty. They're a little bit leery about jumping in there with both feet and throwing rocks and breaking some glass. On the other hand, I know three or four or five agents like myself that our attitude is, well, nobody told us we couldn't do it. And that's the kind of guy you want working for you. You want somebody who's always pushing the limits, challenging the law and saying, well, who said that? I'm stupid. I'm an agent. How come you can do that? Tell me why you think that works better, or why should I believe you? I don't believe you. I believe my veteran. And we win more times than the average bear. It's because we're persistent, because we're buttheads. I guess that's my attitude about it. I just won't take no for an answer. If something defeats me, I go around it. I don't try to go through it. That's foolish. He'd spend 10 years trying to go through it. It's easier to just go around it, file a different claim, file it under a different name. Well, if it ain't PTSD, then it must be TBI, right? But, NOVA it's like a hand grenade against a VA. They teach you so many things as brand new dumb shit attorneys and agents. They teach you so much. They turn you into a Sherman tank. You're indestructible. Nothing stops you. We can, it's like what they say, Star Trek, boldly going where no man has gone before. That's what NOVA is. I love it. There's a lot of guys that been there a long time that give you a lot of background advice. And then there's a lot of newer ones who are, the young Turks, the ones who want to make a name for themselves. So it's an eclectic mix of old and new, talent versus newbies. FNGs. And FNGs absorb the knowledge from their higher-ups and whatnot, and it makes them just every bit as lethal going down the road. That's what I'm doing with SMC. I'm augmenting even that knowledge above and beyond NOVA, because nobody teaches SMC. Nobody seems to know how to do it. And even the people who act like they know how to do it open their mouths and demonstrate that they don't know what the hell they're talking about. That's what scares me, is some of these veterans help websites, and you get somebody on there and starts talking and telling you, some guy named Lemuel telling you, well, yeah, this PCAFC, this is aid in attendance, and you got to have this and this and this to win it. And somebody else comes along and says, excuse me, I have aid in attendance and I don't have PCAF. So, well, then you don't know what you're talking about. Well, you don't want to experience that. If you're going to go someplace for advice, you better get the right advice, or you're actually harming veterans. That's what scares me, is there's too much ignorance out there masquerading itself as somebody with a lot of experience. James Cripps, Ray Cobb, you guys could teach SMC almost to the same people, the 10 people I'm teaching it to right now, 11 maybe, but I think eight of them are attorneys, and they come up with some arcane questions. After I get to R, so how do I get the housebound after I get R? Because that's higher, because that's SMCS. Yeah, going like, damn, I've already done 6 classes and get ready to start class number 7. Get it out of your head. Ignore the alphabetic order of which things occur. SMCS is the beginning, and it's not aid and attendance. It's housebound. It's something entirely different. Don't confuse the two. And it's way lower than R1, in case you didn't look on the financial schedule. I guess maybe I got to show them that next. Maybe that would make it dawn on them. The S pays the $42.95 if you're married, and T pays $10,905. It is right after S, but there's a broad expanse in between. But unfortunately, nobody knows anything about SMC. I get the HLR people or the DROs, all the coaches and everybody else, they think they know it, but they all lean on that stupid M21, and that's what kills them. If somebody handed you a Bible and it was missing the whole Old Testament, but except for the first three pages, you can't just fill that in with some fast talking. Or worse yet, it's been translated into Swahili, and you're trying to preach it and dissect it and decipher it all at the same time. M21 changes 135 times a year. If you're going to depend on something like that, it's insane. They don't recognize regulations, statute, or precedents from the court. Or if they do, it's 10 years after it happens. So anybody that preaches M21 or teaches it or proposes to explain it to you in simple terms, what have I told you guys when I came to Tennessee? I said, man, that's like the IKEA bookshelf instruction. My God, you better pray they don't come out with a new IKEA bookshelf and keep sticking the same instructions in there with the old, with the new one. That's what your deal. Go ahead.
But they believe in it. You know, I mean, I know our county service office and the other two ladies in that office. Well, we refer to the M21. I don't know how many times I've heard that. And then they say, well, Ray means well, but he doesn't know what he's talking about. He's not a certified agent. Well, you don't have to be a certified agent to know what you're talking about. James Griff's isn't a certified agent, and he knows a whole lot more than I do.
And he could be one just off the knowledge that I've seen him demonstrate about VA law. The guy, I've seen him on certain websites say, you know, hey, come on, man, quit blowing a bunch of hot air. And you know that isn't true because you can read this regulation right here and somebody come back and says, yeah, but the M21 says, well, James will blow that right out of the water in 2 seconds.
But I'm too old and I'm too decrepit and I don't have enough years left. If I took clients, they would just have to start all over again when I died.
How true.
I just tell them to take the M21 to the board and see what happens to them.
Oh, God. Don't go there. That's a stinging rebuke when I do it. The one time I did it. BVA has senior judges up there that have been there for a long, long time. And they've seen everything, they've heard everything, and they've done everything. And I ran into one of them back in 18. I had her 3 days in a row, three different claims. On the third day, I happened to mention the ugly word M21. I got just butchered. I got eviscerated like a below-the-knees amputation suddenly. She said, okay. Let me explain something to you, Mr. Graham. The M21, it's just an instruction manual. It has no law attached to it. If you want to talk to me in 38 CFR or USC, or if not, we're done. Oh, no, Mr. Your Honor, no, we're a far cry from being done. I don't like to use the M21. I just thought maybe it'd be easier for you to. No, I don't even know it. I don't even want to know it. It doesn't exist in my world. I said, well, that's good. It's a lot easier for me to deal with 38 CFR because I damn near got that sucker memorized. I remember one judge I got in front of her. I don't know if I ever mentioned her to you. Her name was Ursula Powell. Ursula R. I don't know what R stood for. Everybody referred to as Ursula the Unmerciful. And I swear to God, she was vicious. She just look at you right in the middle of a hearing. She says, well, are we done here? Is that all you got? You know, I guess we could go ahead and burn up another 25 minutes of you telling me, you know, that your ankles hurt. But, I mean, do you guys got any IMOs? You got medical opinions? what do you got in the bag there? Or are we done? And I'd never, ever encountered that before. Fortunately, I did have an IMO, and I was getting ready to spring it. So I kind of shut her up quick. I won that one, but she, the poor gal, her and her husband had got a Georgia Department of Veterans Affairs a guy, had already gone up to the board about 4 years before and got bitch slapped. It wasn't nice, the jerking around they got. They deserved better. And Ursula, she wasn't the one that heard the earlier one, but I was looking at the transcript from the earlier one, and the Georgia Department of Veterans Affairs guy in the middle of his decision used the F word. You effing got to believe this woman, Your Honor. Well, I don't think you're going to win any claims using expletives on a recording, but she lost that one. But I made a good, I don't know. I polished up my little silver tongue before I got in front of her down there in Atlanta on a travel board, and she bought my shtick. She granted that thing, and I argue it was real simple. It was a Camp Lejeune water claim, one of the early ones, and it was simple to win it because every one of VA's denials hinged on the presumptive. If you look at the list of presumptives of diseases that you could get from Camp Lejeune water, not one of them was a glioblastoma, and they just kept of the brain, and or it could be pronounced glioblastoma. I'm not a doctor. But they kept harping on it not being on the list, and I didn't think there was. I thought my guy had an ironclad case. He worked in the motor pool. And he was around just as much benzene and TCE and I can't even think of all the things that we used to use, MEK, xylene, all kinds of nasty shit to clean out machine guns and stuff. Anything we could find, toluene, anything like that. We got it all over ourselves because we didn't have them fancy little rubber gloves or any of that stuff. And I just argued real simply. I said, you know, these guys keep trying to beat me down on the presumptive. I've never, ever said squat about presumptive, Your Honor. I keep telling you it's on a direct basis. The man was stationed there. He shampooed and he drank the water and he bathed in it, and et cetera, ad nauseum. But mostly worked in that dang motor pool, and he got exposed to the benzene and the TCE for the better part of 2.5 years while he was there, in addition to all the goddamn stuff that was going on with the water. So on a direct basis, it should be granted, in my independent medical opinion, for Mednick Associates says it's on a direct basis due to the exposure and inhaling all the fumes from exhaust and whatnot. We don't argue that he got it from, you know, the bad water per se, but we think it might have contributed to it. She granted. We got a real nice SMCM out of that. Unfortunately, he died about 4 months before I won it, so he didn't get to give me a high five. But I enjoy doing those kind of claims. It's just not the money. It's the being right. It's about helping veterans. I can't even begin to spread enough of that joy about helping another veteran, Ray, getting him R2, things like that. It's just, you learn how to beard the lion in his own den, and it's so damn rewarding. You wouldn't give a shit if you just did it for free. Just the joy of all the times that VA told me to go. And I get to tell them. Suck on that one, homie. I'm sorry. Now I'm going to shut up for a minute and eat a pretzel.
You know, Alex, you heard anything?
Alex?
Alex, you were talking
heard
about
anything
that.
About
yeah,
the new? Heard anything
ahead,
about the new presumptive location stateside?
No, I haven't. In fact, all they've done is start talking about Anniston down there near Fort Mac. But they're
right.
not trying. To, they're not including Fort Mac. And I've got one of my boys in on that. He was a military policeman, did his AIT there at Fort Mac. And then he was another 8 months after that even. And they had them doing, you know, regular combat training, down on the ground, slithering through the grass and all that stuff. He witnessed them spraying it out of hand sprayers along the sides of the road that everybody was exposed to. And plus, I got the environmental report for 1998. They went back in there and found a whole bunch of nasty-ass chemicals, like 2,4-5, not the full complement, but they had the 2,4-5 or 2,4-D on the shelf right next to the 2,4-5. And so, like, even if you sprayed them both in the same ditch, you created Agent Orange in the ditch. And, you know, VA is kind of quiet on the subject, but there's 6 different flavors of pesticides, rainbow herbicides, one of which is Agent White. And that's not the toxic dioxin version. Neither is Agent Blue. Blue is
yeah, that's Tordon.
Tordon. Well, Agent White's Tordon 101.
Right.
Agent Blue is a cacodylic acid.
So but I think they're considering the locations that were on the list that came out in 2003, which was supposed to have been 85% complete.
Well, I go for the actual chemicals that I can find on the list in their storage bins that have been sitting there since 1974. If they were there in 74, it's safe to say they were there in 68. My guy went through there in 78, I think. 80. If it's toxic in Laos and around those bases in Vietnam and Anderson Island 50 years later, I think it's safe to say it's still just as toxic as anywhere else, Fort Drum, Fort Mac, Fort wherever. Eventually, look how far we've come, James. We've come all the way from saying we didn't use anything but tactical herbicides in Thailand. Well, define tactical herbicides. You know, that's a misnomer. Apparently, according to the PACT Act, all that shit we sprayed in Thailand, turns out it was kind of toxic, just like Agent Orange. And, well, oh, what about, you know, the islands over there, all the other places that they're exposing? They didn't generally cut. Have you seen the list in Laos? It's a window of about 16 months. Hell, I was up there for 2 years watching it go on. A year after they said they quit doing it. This stuff was essential. We'd spray those mountain runways that are a little bit shorter than my lower 40 back here for a PC-6s and Helio Couriers to land and take off. But Southeast Asia, as I imagine Georgia or any other places, vegetation runs wild for the greater part of the year. There's no cooling off and snow and things abate. Everything just keeps growing like a weed, and you have to abate it somehow. And you don't get a whole bunch of locals to go out there and pick the weeds and pull them off the runway. There's simpler ways to do it, and we did it. And all you have to do is look at those kids with no eyes, the flesh completely over their eyes. Have you ever seen any of those thalidomide pictures from the 60s, James?
I have.
Guys with a hand sprouting out of their arm. pronated feet coming at the knee, attached to the knees with no lower part of the extremity. That's what you see in Laos in the heavily sprayed areas where they were actually spraying pink, green, and purple, not to mention the orange.
I thought pink was about the worst.
Well, they had a super orange where they didn't even waste it. It used to be I had to add a 50-50, one-to-one. You had to put a petroleum distillate in there, gasoline, avgas, contaminated something, motor oil from changing oil out on Jeeps or something. Take all that petroleum distillate, mix it 50-50 with Agent Orange to spray it so that it would adhere to the vegetation. Otherwise, it'd just run off, and if it rained, it was done. But it goes right down into the soil, and nothing wants to grow there, but it doesn't kill the active vegetation, the leafy material, banana leaves, palm trees, and that kind of shit. When you spray it, when you do it 50-50, one-to-one, it's very lethal in a period of 5 to 7 hours. You could, if you had a time-release camera, you could witness all of a sudden there's no mosquitoes, there's no ants, there's no snakes, and then all of a sudden you start seeing the monkeys falling out of the trees. And that's when you know how toxic it is. I saw all of that in my 2 years over there, and that told me a lot, but we thought it was the neatest thing in the world because it got rid of the mosquitoes and those goddamn red ants. It got into my Fig Newtons. So, it had a positive aspect to it, especially with where mosquitoes were concerned. But you knew it was ugly stuff if it could kill monkeys.
We mixed some picloram in with it, which made it stay in the liquid state a whole lot longer, give it time to drip off the canopies and absorb into the ground.
Well, the fact that those people still have that, all it does is sit there in the first 6 inches of that red clay. It never ever, the induration period on that's like 75 years before it ever gets down out of the soil. So all that rice they're still producing nowadays, it's still just rife with Agent Orange or pink, green, purple, take your pick. Or blue and white. I saw a lot of blue and white up at Long Tian and Laos. But that's not to say that there would not. I knew there was drums of Agent Orange, right? Because they were right there on the edge of the flat line. They roll them over and hook them up and pump them into the PC6 tanks. Well, I never saw any 123s up there doing the Roundup. Excuse me, I wouldn't call them a Roundup.
The blue and white kill crops. It was water.
It kills human beings, too.
Well, it just kind of did that.
I don't argue about it. All I know is that they consider them all equal in terms of what kind of damage what they do to you, doesn't it? Obviously, Agent Blue, Agent White have absolutely no TCDD in it. There's no dioxin in them, but they still grant you the same presumption as they do for all six of them. I don't see where they're going to go a whole lot further. Look what they did with the PACT Act. They outran, and this is pretty tricky, the Nehmer Court was the Ninth Circuit down in San Francisco. Those were the ones that ruled in Beverly Nehmer's favor, not the VA, not anyone else. So it's a civilian case, and the benefits accrue not only to the veteran, but if a veteran's wife or the child came down with a spina bifida, one, I think it is, not two, that they would get benefits for that, which is not to say you can't do what I did and say, hey, wait a minute, let's go to Mednick. Let's find out if the fact that the child came down with pick one, you know, let's just say multiple sclerosis or something, that disease, multiple sclerosis, which is on the list for Agent Orange, could be on a direct descent level, genetically speaking, just like the same way that the spina bifida is. It's important to understand that. There's two different philosophies about this. There's presumptive and there's direct. And if you can prove you were directly exposed to it, the best way to do that is to suffer from diabetes, lung cancer, or any of Parkinson's, any of that nasty batch of crap, the 14 things on that list.
The biggest giveaway, Alex, is chloracne. If you got chloracne, you were directly exposed to Agent Orange.
Well, I've got porphyria, and I was directly exposed to it.
Yeah, yeah. Both of those.
That's the other one.
Both
have to
of
manifest
those.
That within 1 year of leaving Vietnam, and I did.
Well, I did too, but you don't have to have it. It don't have to manifest within one year of last exposure if you can prove it on a direct.
On a direct, correct. I'm talking. That's the presumptive. I managed to qualify for it on the presumptive real easy because I went to the flight surgeon and I said, I'm coughing up blood. What's that all about? And that was 15 months after I got there, 3 months into my second tour. He says, well, it's them goddamn Marlboro Reds you're smoking. Switch to the lights. That's a mentality we were dealing with back there. But I parlayed that into saying, yeah, well, obviously I was getting enough something into me to make me cough. And nobody was smoking Marlboro Reds. All my buddies weren't necessarily coming down with it. So anyway, yeah, I had all the skin problems manifest early on within that first year. Well, before I even left during the second year, the open lesions on my skin. Just rubbing up against the aircraft that had it on them. This ain't rocket science. But the NOVA conference this year was informative, but I will say the majority of my time there is spent networking, learning new tricks on how to skin the VA cat, and reading and hearing about new processes. Hold on a second, I'll put that. Somebody didn't know I'm having a radio show right now. Anyway, it's an important facet to know this. I like to network with Amy Odom and Robert Chisholm and Ken Carpenter and a few other guys, and some of them have really cool things they find out about VBMS, and I'll say, hey, did you know if you click on the F4 key and when you're in case flow, do you know what that does? I know what? And they'll say, watch this, because we about 80% of the guys in there are looking at their goddamn VBMS feed while we're doing the conferences. We can do it now remotely. So you don't need to use Citrix. There's another program called Azure. It's even far simpler. That's why I don't understand why veterans don't have this. What on earth? Why are they keeping this away from veterans? There's no, this isn't no secret squirrel shit. There's no way a veteran could get in there and change his own file. If there was, I don't know. I'm officer of the court. I can't tamper with my own file. Everybody wants to know how I got in there into my own file. And I tell them, well, you know, I'm registered with the OGC as Gordon A. Graham, but I filed my access under G. Alexander E. Graham. So, you know, I think they must think I'm two different people. Anyway, nobody told me how to play the game, and nobody told me I couldn't do it. So now I'm about the only guy I know of that's got access to his own file. And in order to fix that for some of my friends, I take their power of attorney for some of these guys that are also veterans and VA attorneys. I'll just take their power of attorney and report back to them, tell them what's going on in their own files if they need to know. Like I said, there's more than one way to skin a cat, John. Ray, back to you. Yeah. Over.
Yeah. There's more than one way to skin a cat. You know, you have to be tactful in what you do. But with that comes, time comes experience. Once you do this longer, the longer you do, the more tact you can develop. And it helps you in the long run to win what you're after. So.
Well, I'm admitted to practice at the court, but I'll tell you what, it's a completely different form of law and the paperwork you got to go through and the stuff you, it's a time consuming. I can help three vets win down here at the board or locally for every guy I could take up to the court and thrash around up there for a couple of years. So I just hand all that stuff off to Ken or to Robert Chisholm and say, you know, fly at it, guys. It's not about the money. It's about winning for the veteran. I don't care if you give me any money for, if you get a win for him. If you get a win for him, that is my payment to me. That old boy is not going to be living underneath an overpass.
Right. Yeah.
Amy did a good job. Amy Odom did me a good job.
Oh, it's, you know, oh yeah, she's red hot, James. I saw that when I think the first time I wrote her up, started talking about it was in 2013. I can't remember. I think it was Buczynski. It was a real famous case. And she was still working for NVLSP when she won that. And I wrote it up. And I have a friend that's a veterans law judge that we won't talk about. He happened to talk to me. He said, man, you know, I like the way you wrote up, you know, real kind of a country way you write about writing up what Amy did, man. I think she's going to go far. And it wasn't 10 minutes later, old Robert Chisholm called her up and said, hey, you want to come to work for CCK? We like what you're smoking. So
that's a good deal.
There's going to be some people in this business who just have a natural gift for it. And Zach Stoltz, who does most of the arguing now for if Amy doesn't up at the court, classic example of somebody that is sharpest tool I've ever met. And Amy'd probably be right behind him, and she'll probably surpass him someday because, you know, women are a little bit smarter than men. I don't mind admitting that. My wife's a wizard. I could tell her all about some poor old boy who's got a purple heart and been more screwed over than God could ever dump in one place, like that old boy in the Bible. Saddle them with more problems than they could ever have in one lifetime. And she'll say, well, why don't you start doing this? And you know, why do you always insist on doing it that way? And the little light bulb comes on over your head. You go, wow, never even looked at it from that standpoint. Thanks, Debbie. And all of a sudden, off we go and start winning our claims again. I think women bring a greater gift to us. A lot of men think their shit don't stink, and I don't buy into that. If you knew how many women come to me and say, would you take my husband's claim? You know, not. That's the way it works. I got to stop. Go ahead.
You have 45 seconds up. Alex, you take the new clearance, or are you kind of on pause right now?
Well, I just took two new ones today, but I took them for the sole purpose of reviewing their cases. So I'm doing that.
Okay.
And if they look like they're red hot, I'll forward them to another attorney like Robin Hood or somebody else. So I'm acting like a clearinghouse when I can't do them myself. I don't want them to walk away, go to a VSO.
Right. Okay. That'll work. But people listeners know we've been contacting Mr. Graham, and he'll, if he can't do it himself, we'll put you with somebody that can. But
yes, sir.
All right, we're out of time, guys. I want to thank everybody for coming on. This is John, half of Ray Cobb, James Cripps, Alex Graham. We'll see you next week.
Thanks, guys.
All right.
Yeah, good night.
Night-night.
You have been listening to the Exposed Vet Podcast. Any opinions expressed on the show are the opinions of the guest speakers and not necessarily the opinions of Exposed Vet, ExposedVet.com, or Blog Talk Radio. Tune in next week for another episode of the Exposed Vet Podcast. Thanks for listening.